Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. With me is Kyle. We are in the doldrums of the offseason, the NFL-less offseason, and we took a bit of a week to get ourselves situated for the offseason and to let Kyle focus on solo parenting for
a couple my wife weeks was there. My wife was she just got home, but she was on an overseas trip teaching a class, and let's be honest, we both we were tired after that draft, man. I think through 2 years now of doing this new version of the pod, I think the thing we've gotten the most compliments on by far is the draft coverage that we do, and that's cool to hear. We put a lot of work into it, so it was a lot of fun. But yeah, I think we were both like, you know what, I got nothing I want to talk about this week, last week. So here we are. But this week, we are preparing. So the next big thing for us, much more fun and more relaxed, but we are going to solicit audience input, folks.
Yes.
Just like we did last year when we did a tournament and we brought back our old buddy Eric, who was our third host back in the original run of the Scottcast way back when, in the Trestman, in the Lovey Trestman era, when we tried this thing in the first place. Eric's going to rejoin us to help with this too. But folks, we are going to, last year we did a tournament for the worst Bears of the last 20 years. This year we're wanting to do the worst Bears games of the, do we want to say 20, 25 years? Do we want to say worst Bears games of our lives? I guess we haven't even asked about that. Where are we capping it?
We are going with the worst Bears games of our lives for this one, I think. Just like we started off the Cap of Shame, we're going to start with that, and then we'll move it as we come back in like 5 years.
Yeah, so, now granted, so Travis, Eric, and I, we are all roughly 35 years of age, so we are presidential. Yep. So there might be a couple of you on Twitter who are going to throw some games at us from the 80s, and we might mention them, and then we'll move on quickly, and they won't make the bracket because we didn't watch them. We weren't there. We don't remember them. So for us, it's probably not going to stick. So if you're going to come at me and be like, how could you choose this loss to the Packers in 2015 over this one in 1992, the simple answer is going to be because I don't fucking remember that one. Yeah, so
we aren't going to fucking Dan Pompey this and be like, in 1965, the Bears played a game even I don't fucking remember. And that's not ending up on the list.
But if you listen to the Scottcast and you are on Twitter, or you want to use is it just startkyleorton@gmail.com?
startkyleorton@gmail.com.
Okay, and if you're on Twitter, I want you to shout at me the worst Bears games of your life, in your opinion. And folks, we're a big part of this, just like last year. We're going to debate what worst really means. What worst Bears game really means. Because I think we would both argue that there's a difference between a bad football game and a specifically the kind of bad football game that the Bears are known for. That's going to be a big part of when we're discussing what makes something a quintessential, not just a bad loss, but a quintessential Bears loss.
That's right.
So yeah, tweet at me. Tell me games you think need to be included, need to be up for debate. I'll try to, if it's one that we haven't thought of yet, and you brought it to my attention, brought it to our attention, I will shout you out. We've already had one guy, a good friend of ours, good friend of the podcast, John, who has also helped me previously in learning how to adjust my microphone so I'm not assaulting all of your ears every week. He's done us another service. He sent us a very well-researched, very thorough Google document laying out the games that he believes should be included. We appreciate John for that already. Lot of fodder there for discussion. But yeah, that's the tournament. The tournament's going to be this year, just like last year. I bet we'll probably do one, maybe even two episodes simply debating and narrowing it down to get a bracket before we even do the tournament itself.
This is going to be a long one. Last year, Kyle came into that thing and I had a horse in that race, right? This year, I have no idea what
it's going to be. I am really open to, because if you ask me off the top of my head which one's the worst, and spoiler alert, and we'll discuss this, some folks might say losing the Super Bowl, and I can understand why that feels the biggest and most painful to some people. For me, that was the end of the best Bears season of my lifetime, and it's not that embarrassing, actually, to lose a Super Bowl.
One of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Yeah, put up a good showing. Yeah. We got the Devin Hester return.
Right. There are a lot more embarrassing things that the Bears have done. So, I mean, some people are just in advance. I know there's going to be someone who's gonna be like, how can you put a week four loss in a season where they went 5-11 versus losing a Super Bowl? And you know, that it's up to us to decide what makes something truly a bad Bears game. And to me, the fact that they were playing in a Super Bowl, it does not make it one of the worst. But we'll get there. Those kind of philosophical discussions await us. But please tweet at us, email us your suggestions, the games that you need us to at least debate for inclusion on the bracket. We'll appreciate it. We'll shout you guys out. So that's the housekeeping.
The important thing here is, yeah, like shoot us this in the email, shoot it out to Kyle. Make sure to follow Kyle on Twitter, because we're going to be putting it up just like last year. We're going to let you guys...
There will be voting, the matchups, and the voting,
and we want to see what you guys think. Last year, I don't think we could have had a more different opinion than people who voted.
Yeah, it was funny. Last year was the worst Bears players, and we took a much more philosophical view, I think, of a lot of these guys.
We took
into account certain things like opportunity cost and draft status and contract status. Mm-hmm. Whereas the theme on Twitter very much seems to be like literally just like the worst,
right?
In an absolute sense, player. Like these guys were like, no, it's Jonathan Quinn, man. And I'm like, I get it, but at the same time,
like, yes, technically, it is Jonathan Quinn.
Yes, but no. Anyway, so yeah, no, this should be fun to find out what people consider to be a bad Bears game too for them.
Spoiler, shout that Jonathan Quinn will appear in some of these Bears without games, folks.
Question: I think he'll at least one of his will get it. I know for a fact at least one game that he participated in has to be on my final field of 16. I know that, so,
without a doubt,
one of those has to be on there. I know exactly which one I'm voting for. I don't know if it's the same one you're voting for. We'll get there. I think it probably is, though. I'm pretty sure, probably.
I'm very excited. Very excited. Please, folks, send us in your requests. Send us in a little write-up about why. Try to convince us that it should be included.
Hopefully this will be a cathartic purging of a lot of bad Bears funk before we enter the Caleb era, which will hopefully represent the reversal of fortune we've been awaiting all of our lives. So anyway, so that's that. Today, I just thought, you know, we'd take a brief break from all this draft prep and all this Bears-specific discussion, and then before we launch into the Bears tournament, you know, there are other teams in the NFL.
They did stuff.
That's true. They did stuff this offseason, and, you know, while there's still some free agents out there to be signed, for the most part, we have a pretty good idea of what these teams are going to be and what their plan is. Was this offseason, and I just want to talk about some topics around the league. Does that sound good to you, Travis, my boy? Let's
that see. Sounds about, great. I do think it's time to think about this upcoming NFL season. We've spent so long in the draft bunker. Yeah. Let's think about actual current NFL players for a little bit.
Okay, so question number one, and it's a question that I think we asked this last year. I think I will ask this every year. Is there even a plan for the Raiders right now? What the fuck are they doing?
I love that this is a tradition now for this guy.
I just can't even, I think there's probably not a team that I disagree with more on how they chose to approach this offseason than the Washington Commanders and the quarterback they chose to take and all that. But at least I can see what the Commanders' plan is. It's a bad one, but they've got a plan. You know, there's a lot of teams out there that, like, I might quit, like the Lions. We'll talk here in a little bit about the Jared Goff contract. I think that's an interesting topic. I don't know that I can see what the Lions' plan is, and I can understand what they think they're getting, like what their hope is, what they think they're getting there. But like, looking at the Raiders, what is your plan? What was the point of ditching Derek Carr just to sign Jimmy Garoppolo? What is the point of ditching Jimmy Garoppolo just to sign Gardner Minshew? What is this? And then you didn't, I thought for sure, Gardner Minshew, well, there's the bridgiest bridge quarterback that ever bridged. Surely they're taking a guy in the first round this year. And the rumors were that they liked Michael Penix. The rumors were that they wanted to come up for Jaden Daniels. So that maybe they were considering it and they just got frozen out. But like, why didn't you guys go for JJ McCarthy then? Like you were, it cost the Vikings a single fourth round pick to move up and take JJ. You were right there. You could have done that. What is your plan? What is your plan?
Yeah, I think last year we had this discussion, and I kept yelling like, why do you have Devontae Adams on this team? Like, what is his use to this team? You're not going anywhere. That's your best trade chip. Shouldn't you get something for that? This year, now that they've done this 3 years in a row, we have three separate quarterbacks for this team, three whole unique teams, like three new coaching staffs. And it's the same team. It's just the pieces move around. The names change, but it's the same 8-win team. So 2 years ago, Pythagorean win loss for the Raiders. Even though they won six games, Pythagorean win loss, 8.32. This last year, 8.65. So they're back up to 8 wins because that's just, you know, the noise went away. That it's the same team right now, right? With Gardner Minshew. Don't they just seem like a Pythagorean 8.5 win team? Maybe you win 7 games, maybe you win 8, maybe you win 9. You're not actually going anywhere. You don't have a strength. There's no strength on this team, except for Max Crosby. But you've weakened that by drafting Tyree Wilson and wasting that pick. It's just, it's such a weird collection of guys. And what it is, and we've said this before, I feel like we're going to say this for many years now, is the Raiders are just the new Bears. The Bears started to bottom out. We like hit rock bottom multiple years in a row. We're actually trying to reset the team. And somebody had to pick up the crown of the team that is just going to go out there and pick somewhere between 13 and 18 and like do nothing. And nobody is scared to play you, but you could still like somehow beat them. That team is the Raiders now. They are stuck in this morass. And I don't see any way for them to get out of it. They're too good to bottom out, and they are too bad to do anything. And they're just here now, man. The unique thing, though, has to be that when the Bears did this, they would stick with a guy like Jay Cutler, you know? Like, we would try to ride it out with a quarterback, right? Really, really attempt to ascend to that next level. But the Raiders were like, fuck it, Gardner Minshew.
Jay Cutler was a first-round pick. Jay Cutler was traded for multiple first-round picks. He was a Pro Bowler at one point in time.
Yeah.
He had an incredible arm. We obviously all held on to the Jay Cutler dream a little bit too long, but you could always see why people talked themselves into Jay Cutler. They are getting guys. They have continually gone. So Derek Carr is very much a Jay Cutler, where it was like, look, it theoretically, you're the guy that I could see going on a, there's like three types of quarterbacks you can win a Super Bowl with. There's the elite, and this is going to come up again here in a minute when we talk about the Jared Goff contract. There is the elite, Patrick Mahomes type. I think he's in a tier all by himself. And then the next tier also includes some guys who I think could do this, like Josh Allen, where it's like, they are, even after you've paid them, good enough to overcome the weaknesses on a bad roster and carry your team all the way to a Super Bowl. Then there is the group of guys who are capable of, you know, they need a good team around them. They can't do it with no help, but at the same time, like, they are a guy you win with, and that they will elevate the roster, and that you can easily see them winning a Super Bowl. Then there's like these tier three guys who are like, they're not going to carry you to a Super Bowl, but if you had a really good team, they could theoretically get hot and go on what, you know, we'll always call the Flacco run, where it's like, is he capable of having that 3-game stretch where he just does an incredible impersonation of an elite quarterback? And yep. Derek Carr, like Jay Cutler, was like one of those guys at the very, 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 very bottom of that tier three, where it's like, it's probably never going to happen, but you could see the Flacco run in that guy.
Yeah.
Then they went from Derek Carr to Jimmy G, who has proven nothing other than that you can put him in a tier one situation. You can put him in the Super Bowl twice and he'll still fucking... I guess he wasn't in there the second time. But still, you can put him in the Super Bowl and he'll fucking blow it. He'll fucking blow it. He can't... He'll hold you back from that Super Bowl. So why you're going from Derek Carr to Jimmy Garoppolo makes no sense. But again, we thought it was because they were going to make a move for a quarterback. Jimmy Garoppolo, and then you move up and you take Anthony Richardson or whatever. That's a plan.
Yeah.
And then Gardner Minshew, but then you move up and you take J.J. McCarthy. That's a plan. This is not a plan. This is nothing. Yeah. You are spinning your... Jim, whatever tier, you know, Derek Carr was in, Gardner Minshew's two tiers below that. He's the guy that, if everything around him is perfect, could make the wild card round. That's his best case. You're talking, you've got your fucking, you've got your Shane Matthews guy here now. What is your plan? Yep. It's so rare nowadays in this NFL where most people seem to at least understand that, like, you are nothing without a quarterback, to see a team just not even try to find that guy who has even theoretical upside. I thought the Raiders might do something smart, and they seemed like such a perfect fit, just given the history of that organization. I thought in like round two or round three, you could see Las Vegas take a shot on Spencer Rattler. And I was almost ready to applaud that as kind of shrewd, because I think Rattler has as much talent, if not more so, than that second tier of guys that went in the first round. And I still can't believe six guys went in the first round in a draft where I had actual first round grades on. I had actual first half of the first round grades on two guys. I had a back half of the first round grade on a third guy. And I had second and third round grades on the other three guys that went in the first round.
Right.
But yeah, they didn't even in a draft where six quarterbacks went in the first round, they still didn't take a chance on a guy. They didn't take Rattler or anything. Cause I thought Spencer Rattler, you know, they've got some pieces on the offensive line. You took Brock Bowers, so you're going to have some awesome 12 personnel. You have Davante Adams. That was my sneaky pick for a guy who actually ends up in what turns out to be a pretty good situation for a rookie quarterback and surprises everybody. And they didn't even take a lotto ticket project QB. I cannot fathom in today's NFL just openly admitting that, like, you're fine with the purgatory. You're not even trying to find, like, hope to sell anyone.
You want those eight wins. You can taste those eight wins, and that is what you need. That's all I can say for the Raiders is, yeah, they want 8-9 or 9-8, and probably to miss the playoffs or to get in and just get stomped and go home early. And I, you know what? I can't wait to talk about them again next offseason when they're starting Aiden O'Connell. Like, who's the next guy?
Yeah,
who's up? Well, Adams keeps saying that he is fine being in Las Vegas. So,
well, and even okay. Like the Brock Bowers pick, like it's one of those things where it's like, okay, like it's hard to quibble with Brock Bowers at pick 13 because, you know, Brock Bowers that's good value there. He's an elite talent, but like, is there any position that moves the needle less than a potentially elite tight end on a team without a quarterback?
Or on a team that took a tight end last year with Michael Meyer.
Is Gardner Minshew going to cook in 12 personnel this year? Like, he's going to have a nice completion percentage. I'll tell you that much about Gardner Minshew. But that's, you know, he's gonna do some Alex Smith stuff. And you're going to try to, are you like trying to build the Alex Smith era Chiefs in the same division as the Patrick Mahomes era Chiefs? Because that's not going to work, guys.
That is the one thing I could say about this, is Gardner Minshew is approaching Alex Smith territory as far as the number of opportunities he has had to start NFL games at this point. And they may be thinking, well, what if he's almost at that Ryan Tannehill, Alex Smith point? And the difference here is, with those guys, they all had first-round talent.
Right.
So if you give that first-round to, or Geno Smith is another example, if you give that guy enough undeserved starts, enough undeserved time in the NFL, they're absolutely going to develop into a quarterback who can play at a high level of competition. But Gardner Minshew isn't that dude. Gardner Minshew was a very late round draft pick. He was always going to be a backup level quarterback. And there's no guy who is, there's no ascension that's going to take place for this guy.
Yeah, he is as maxed out gets. We've almost spent too much time on it, but I just like, they're the only team in the NFL right now. Because, I mean, there are teams in the NFL that I'm like, that's not going to work. But, like, I get what they're trying to do. The Raiders are the only team I can look at and be like, you can't possibly believe that you have a plan here, right? Like, can you? All right. Yeah. So, to that matter, just speaking about, I don't agree with it, but I can see that there is a plan. We didn't get it. We honestly didn't spend enough time on it. Is there a way for you to rationalize the Michael Penix pick? Is there any world where you can where you can make it make sense to you?
This was lost the time. We talked about this a bit during the draft. The one thing I can think is, and our good friend who joined us during the podcast brought up a word that I really wanted to also bring up here, is meta. It's the meta of the NFL. Right now, the quarterback meta in the NFL is the guy who can make the over-the-middle throws, right? Very middle of the field, doesn't necessarily need a big arm. It's the Brock Purdy meta, the Tua Tagovailoa meta, right? This is why J.J. McCarthy ended up going so high, because what we need right now in the NFL, hit these over-the-middle throws, quick, short passes to open guys who are schemed open there. And partially it's because of the way defenses are set up in the NFL right now. That's the exploitable portion of the field. My only way to rationalize this is for the Falcons to say, you know what? I think the pendulum is going to swing the opposite way, because Michael Penix is the opposite of the quarterback that's in vogue right now, right? He is the opposite of J.J. McCarthy. He is the big arm, throw to the sidelines and down the field guy. Not very good throwing the ball over the middle of the field. Not very mobile, which is something that's very in vogue in the NFL right now. He is a throwback type of quarterback. And my thought is that the Falcons looked in their crystal ball and they're saying, we're betting that we can use Kirk for 2 years, and by the end of those 2 years, this defensive pendulum is going to swing in the opposite direction, and us having Michael Penix with 2 years of experience will be able to exploit what the NFL looks like at that time. Do I think that's actually what they did? No, I think they're fucking idiots. I think Ryan Pace is in that front office, and he has poisoned them into doing one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. But so there is a world in which in 2 years, maybe the NFL does swing the other way, and suddenly Michael Penix, with 2 years of Jordan Love-ass time on the bench, is looking pretty good.
So, I don't think it was Ryan Pace. I found it interesting to read an article for two different people. So, Terry Fontenot, the Falcons GM, and Sean Payton, obviously the Broncos head coach, were both in the Saints front office in 2017. The story that they both tell is that they wanted Patrick Mahomes. He was going to be the heir to Drew Brees. They wanted Patrick Mahomes. They thought they were shy. They thought they were coy about it. Kansas City jumped them, took Patrick Mahomes. Apparently one of them, even someone in the Kansas City Chiefs front office, even then like texted Terry Fontenot, basically saying like, neener, 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 we got him. And that moment in time psychologically scarred those two guys, Terry and Peyton, both, that they are just haunted by this idea of missing out on the guy that they, the quarterback that they liked. And they reached so hard on both Penix and Nix because they are just that afraid of missing out again. But I mean, just like, I feel like the type of quarterback you're taking matters here too. Patrick Mahomes was younger, and Patrick Mahomes was always a freakishly good athlete. He always had a world-class arm talent. He could always make these plays. Patrick Mahomes was like the ideal project quarterback, where it's like all this stuff is there. We just got to put it together. It just needs a little time for us to put it together. And then Michael Penix, meanwhile, is this six-year veteran with worse knees than the 38-year-old quarterback he's going to replace.
Yeah.
And he's ready to go. He's thrown over 2,000 passes or something like that. That's not a project quarterback. That's not Patrick Mahomes. There's not all this ups. That is an asset that can only depreciate. Like, and then, you know, same with the Broncos. Like, nobody was moving up to take Bo Nix from you, man. Like, you got scarred. You got scared. What's weird is you're like bragging about it, that you panicked and were afraid that someone was going to take Bo Nix from you. So, yeah.
Ooh, man, I don't want to talk about it right now because I really want to talk about the rest of the NFC South. But the level of sheer cope by Broncos fans this offseason has been astounding.
It is so funny. I mean, I went...
They think they're going to be very good this year.
It's so funny to me...
And I'd throw some on the ground too, man.
It's so funny to me too because, Sean Payton has this like reputation as this quarterback builder. Like they're like, you're gonna go up against Sean Payton, and I'm just like, well, we're literally just coming off of his failure to rehabilitate Russell Wilson. First of all,
yeah.
This was the man who tried to start Taysom Hill before he relented and started Jameis Winston. He didn't fix Jameis Winston like people said he would. I mean, Jameis was all right with the Saints, but he didn't unlock the Winston potential that everyone thought was there that he would. And even to say that he made Drew Brees, like Drew Brees was a Pro Bowl quarterback his last 2 years in San Diego. Like,
Drew Brees made himself.
Right. Now, was his system the perfect fit for Drew Brees? Yeah, he put up better numbers in New Orleans than he did even in his good years in San Diego. But, like, all the hard part of developing the guy was already done. Like, you just had to plug this guy in. And what's so funny is that it feels like, I think we talked about this a little bit, but it feels like he's trying to recreate old career Drew Brees in Bo Nix, where he's like, that's fine, we'll just only throw short stuff. Like, that's what Drew Brees, we were good. But, like, you need the Drew Brain super brain, or the Drew Brees super brain to make that work. But also, like, that still wasn't enough for New Orleans in the end. So to me, I found it fascinating to find out that Terry Fontenot and Sean Payton both basically just admitted that, like, the psychological damage of having Patrick Mahomes sniped out in front of them is what caused them to make these ill-advised moves this year. I think that's hilarious and very interesting.
Yeah. I the Broncos fans are just making me laugh, and we are going to have a good time with the Broncos fans this season. But I want to talk about the rest of the NFC South. So we had talked about a team that had gone out and overpaid a guy who was aging on the downside of his career. It seemed like he was just like one season away from completely falling off the cliff. And they were expecting this, oh, we're just going to run away with this mediocre division. Now we've got the guy. And we came out here pretty much 1 year ago exactly. And we were like, are they even one full game better? The Saints gained one full game. They still didn't win the division. We have the same story this offseason. We have the Falcons dramatically overpaying Kirk Cousins at the very end of his career, a dude who is better at getting the bag than any other quarterback in NFL history.
And a dude who is now very upset with them.
That's right. And then they pissed him off. And guess what? If the Falcons gained one full game, they would merely be right on the exact same level as the Bucs and the Saints. This is the weirdest fucking division in sports. Each of the three teams who could conceivably win it have a journeyman older quarterback at the top who they think is going to like put them over the top. This division has gone from being like the sad below average division to having three of the four teams be above average, but on that exact same like Las Vegas Raiders like level, right? Where there's no conceivable way that they are doing anything in the postseason. But it's going to be a real dogfight down to that last game of the year to see who goes 9-8 and wins the division, right?
Yeah. Although, I mean, I still kind of like, I know I need to quit him, maybe. I don't know. I mean, he's coming off the best year of his career. I still like Baker. I still think he could be a guy who could.
Isn't the funniest possible scenario that Baker rules this division with Falcons and the Saints overpaying these older dudes?
That's a guy to me who's in that tier three, but would the Flacco run from Baker Mayfield truly surprise you? Like, if Baker Mayfield one of these years just had three of the best games of his life at exactly the right time, one January, would that surprise you at all?
I told you. I told you to write it down.
Yeah.
So. He's got a rich Gannon, this motherfucker. Give it five years.
Carr is the one. And the thing about Baker is he's got the fuck it gene, which is necessary for the Flacco run. Derek Carr, the reason he's never been capable of the Flacco run is Derek Carr's terminal sin is that he saw what happened to his brother and entered the NFL determined not to take too many sacks. And he forever lacks the fuck it gene. He has everything you want. At this point, he's kind of washed, but he had everything you want in a quarterback except for the fuck it gene. He is always just a tick too early to check down, just a tick too early to accept that the big play's not there. Always a little willing to give it up because he doesn't want to take the big hit, because he doesn't want to screw up. He doesn't want to turn it over. Live to fight another down, but like he lacks the fuck it gene, and the fuck it gene is essential to the Flacco run. That is the difference between being the tier three. Like, no, you're not a real top 10 quarterback, but you're a guy that I think on a good team could maybe get hot and look like one just long enough. And the guy that's, you know, you're just, okay, you're just an average QB. And that's the, for Derek Carr, it's the absence of the fuck it gene.
Yeah, I think for Baker specifically, man, the reason I'm looking at that five-year-long window, this is, I'm getting fucking weird with this, but Caleb Williams and Pat Mahomes, you see they're like, Caleb's going to need to get paid. Maybe the Bears don't have anything. They don't have cap space, right, to rebuild. Pat Mahomes is going to need a new contract or something. Maybe he gets into that window and he just sneaks in there and like randomly wins a Super Bowl or something, you know, like the Big Dick Foles Super Bowl, where you're just like, what the hell just happened to the NFL? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers Super Bowl, right, where they beat the Raiders, and you're like, everybody forgets it. It was just a weird year, and then we move on. Yeah. It feels like that's going to be Baker's moment, man.
Could be, yeah. So speaking of the NFC and the NFC South, the one thing I was going to say, so the Panthers have made a lot of moves this offseason to put pieces around Bryce Young. They got Dave Canales. They paid the Tepper tax to hire him. Who else did they like sign? Carolina.
They got Deontay Johnson. Yes. So that's good. We both like Deontay.
Well, and Deontay is a very good, he's good for Bryce Young in that he's a guy who gets clear separation, which is something that Bryce, he's got a little bit of the Fields gene there where he doesn't really like, he wants to see the guy coming open. And then they traded up into the first round to get Xavier Legette. So they put some pieces around Bryce Young. So have they done enough, in your opinion? Have they put enough, and they signed several guards to a very large contract, right? That was... let's see here. Hold on. They signed Jadeveon Clowney, which isn't really building around Bryce, but it's kind of nice to see him go back to Carolina. Let's see here. So they... They signed Robert Hunt and Damian Lewis at guard. And then, yeah, they traded for Deontay Johnson, and they drafted Xavier Legette. So... they still have what's left of Adam Thielen. They still have Jonathan Mingo, which, first of all, I think drafting Xavier Legette when you already have Jonathan Mingo is a choice. because to me, those are like two of the most similar prospects in recent memory. And this is backed up by data, by a ton of data. If you look at like basically any college wide receiver prospect draft chart that you want, the two names that you will invariably see right next to each other in almost every category are Xavier Legette and Jonathan Mingo. So getting those two guys together is odd for me. But yeah, so have they done enough at this point? Does Bryce Young have enough of a supporting cast to really make a definitive statement about him this year if he struggles again? And in your opinion, is there any way that he can be saved? Like, is there any way this works with Bryce at this point, in your opinion?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we both predicted this exact season for him. Maybe not. I think I was a bit more harsh than you were
a bit more harsh
before last season.
Yeah.
Because I just straight up predicted the Panthers would be the worst team in the NFL last year. But I also said at the same time, he's going to have a bad first year because that's just how it's going to be for Bryce. He's going to prove everything in the second and third year. I do think he has enough to where I don't know if we're going to be able to make the final statement on him. I'm not comfortable doing that until year three, but we're going to know where this is going, I think, this season. And that is not entirely his fault, right? We're going to have a nice whole episode on a topic that I think you and I both have really wanted to talk about. It's going to be a long episode about different types of quarterbacks. And how can you ruin a quarterback? What kind of quarterback can you ruin? Bryce Young is the type of quarterback you can ruin. You can absolutely ruin Bryce Young. And we are going to find out this year if the Panthers have ruined him and made it so he cannot unlock that potential that he has, or if he's going to be able to break through that. It's all up to this coaching staff and this situation he's in. I think he has a much better situation than, let's say, Justin did. Season two, right? I mean, these wide receivers are definitely better than that. He has a better interior offensive line than that. This offensive line still isn't great, but not having guys bursting up through the middle into your face is a big upgrade over what Bryce had last year. I do think, I mean, just for Bryce personally, I think he's got a shot this year. And I do think he needs to step up his game because if he doesn't, he's running a big Zach Wilson risk, right? I don't think he's going to be on that level. I think he's going to be okay this year, but I don't think that's going to be enough to lift the Panthers out of the doldrums because, man, that defense is a travesty. And this offense is good enough to be, like, better than 20th in the NFL, maybe, if things go right. Like, so, mediocre, that's kind of what they have to aspire to, but I don't see them being good, you know? This could be another disastrous year for Carolina, or at least they have their pick this year, right? I guess
we still have their second round.
I don't know what they do with it.
We still have.
It's going to be high.
So
yes, yeah, and I mean, in their best case scenario for these Panthers, I feel like is 6 wins, and that would be, I mean, that would be such a huge job by this coaching staff. Given the ownership, given the place the Panthers are in, just as a franchise, I think if they got to 6 wins in this division with 3 other teams who should whoop their ass every time that they play, that would be huge for me. So, yeah, I mean, they're in for another rocky year, but yeah, they're very much a team who just needs to focus on Bryce and just not ruining him. That's this whole season needs to be about. Don't scar him to the point where he's just not ever going to get past this horrible first 2 seasons.
Okay. So yeah. I'm already out on Bryce Young. Which is funny because I was a little bit higher than you. I wish I'd had the courage of my convictions to just go all the way and make Anthony Richardson my true QB2. I hemmed and hawed and I said eventually, and I guess to be clear, Anthony Richardson's accuracy in the little stint of him that we saw was still very concerning to me. Like, if you exclude screen passes, Anthony Richardson was still under 60% completions last year on every other.
There's work to do there.
The accuracy still scares me. And but the ceiling is, it was always obviously higher than Bryce, in my opinion, but I think the disparity is even greater than I thought it was going to be. So there are 41 quarterbacks that qualified with at least 20% of the snaps at the top, dude. In 41 quarterbacks who were qualified in PFF's passing grade from a clean pocket when kept clean, Travis. So this is on plays where Bryce Young was not pressured. On plays where Bryce Young was not pressured.
Yeah.
Where do you think he ranked in passing grade from a clean pocket?
You see, this is how you break a quarterback
out of 41
too, because you see the ghosts. He had such a bad year. I mean, it's got to be like 33rd or something.
Very good. Yes, know? He was 34th.
Okay,
just ahead of Zach Wilson. He had a 73.8 grade from a clean pocket. Zach Wilson was 73.7, and the he was not accurate. Even when he had time, I thought anticipation might be his one saving grace, because he did. I thought he anticipated a little better, especially over the middle of the field at Alabama. Yeah. I thought he anticipated a little better. But what I have realized watching him with the Panthers is that he was not as great of an anticipator as I thought. He did the Tua, where he was, you know, it was performative processing. He was throwing to a predetermined spot at Alabama a lot. And it worked out a lot because he was at Alabama. In Carolina, when he hesitated to make those predetermined throws, then the actual anticipation, which to me, there's a difference between anticipation and it's the difference between an Andy Dalton, who I have always, his entire career, I've accused Andy Dalton of performative processing. Andy Dalton has always been a guy who averages like 2.4 seconds time to throw, which is basically the same as Tom Brady. But in Tom Brady's case, it's because he has perfectly read your defense before he's even snapped the ball, and he knows exactly where to throw it, and he will throw it with timing, touch, and anticipation. Whereas Andy Dalton will line up. He's not really diagnosing. He's like, well, this one's going to AJ Green. And after the ball's snapped, he's throwing it to AJ Green, and sometimes it works out. A lot of times it works out because that guy was AJ Green, but a lot of other times it's intercepted. And that's Bryce Young, I think, in a nutshell. I think all the anticipation and stuff that for lack of a better term, he was getting lucky at Alabama. He was just throwing it. He was predetermining where he was going to throw it, and he was getting right more from that. And it looked like anticipation. But when you see him in Carolina, when he knows he can't just trust that guy is going to be open, then he looks blind. He looked as bad and as clueless out there when kept clean as Justin Fields. And mind you, when Justin Fields was a rookie way back in 2021, I remember being very encouraged by Justin Fields when he was kept clean. His clean pocket passing grade as a rookie was 20th in the NFL at 78.4, quite a bit better than Bryce Young. So he's not a guy. All of the stuff that was supposed to be his superpower, the processing, the anticipation, the seeing, all the stuff that's supposed to make up for the fact that, like, face it, he's got bad tools. We said this. He's, to me, that is like an average to slightly below average NFL arm. The size is obviously really underwhelming.
He's got Gardner Minshew tools, man.
Right. And he didn't. And the things that were supposed to be his superpowers, they weren't. They just weren't. So, I mean, do I think he'll be as bad this year as he was last year? No, but I mean, it's important also that, like, for people to understand, per adjusted net yards per attempt, which I've said multiple times, I like to use. It includes sacks and everything else. It's the best measurement of how effective your dropback passing game ever was. He had basically a bottom 8 rookie season for a first round QB since the Ryan Leaf draft. He was abysmal. He was atrocious. He had essentially the same rookie year as Blaine Gabbert. And I'm willing to say I'm the best case scenario there. Yes. Is that his situation and his coaching was so bad. And because one of the only encouraging names near him on that list is Jared Goff. That first year with Jeff Fisher was a disaster. But I think we can both agree, just like with Jared Goff, like, that is why you don't take that guy number one. overall.
Yep.
The guy that needs everything around him to be perfect is not the guy you should be taking number one overall. You want the guy who can function in the shit show. And I don't think first of all, I don't think you're going to see a cheat code like Sean McVay was for Bryce Young anytime soon, because we are now in an entire generation of NFL defensive coordinators who have made their bones defending that exact scheme. The reason NFL scoring is way down the last couple of years is because all of those cheat codes, you know, back in 2018, you could revolutionize the sport by being like, let's just use a lot of motion. Let's play action a lot. That was enough to throw people, and it's not there anymore. So, yeah, I think I think the Bryce experiment's already over, man. I think he's going to be an underwhelming, like the 24th, 25th best quarterback in the NFL this year. They'll give it one more year after that because they don't really have a choice. But, like, I would be stunned at this point if Bryce Young works out as a Carolina Panther.
That's pretty rough. I mean, it's definitely possible. I think a lot of this falls on Carolina. I don't think his coaching was terrible last year, but I do think there's something we can see, and we're going to talk about this as we get into the preseason. Last year, we talked a lot about those quarterbacks in the preseason because we knew the Bears didn't give a shit about the preseason. And one of the things we said week after week about the difference between Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson, and CJ Stroud was that Stroud and Richardson were clearly being given the full offense. They were being given the full range of throws. They were being given the opportunity to run the whole thing. You know, the coach was sending them out there and being like, hey, man, you know, you need all these reps. We're going to let you have free reign, like go nuts. And it was so clear that Frank Reich was like looking at Bryce Young and being like, we got to get like a couple things down first. That was a bad sign. We pointed out at the time, and it's a bad sign to look out for these five quarterbacks we've got coming into this preseason. If you see a head coach look at these guys and say, we're going to cut you down. You know, we need a small playbook. That's the first sign where we should have probably said, maybe that processing was a bit overhyped. Maybe that's not actually a strength that he had. Because if Frank Reich is looking at you as a quarterback and saying, you can't run my whole offense, like we need to start small and expand outwards, and you've got a guy like Anthony Richardson, who is like the rawest prospect I've seen come out of college in a long time, and his head coach is like, fuck it, go crazy, buddy. Like, that's a huge warning sign. And there is a chance that right from then we should have known this isn't just going to be a miserable first season for Bryce. This is actually just a bust. This is a massive bust for the Panthers. I hope not. I like Bryce. You know, we saw this heading into that situation from a mile away. Like, he's fucked this first year. And it sucks that just a combination of maybe him being a bit overrated going into this draft and then going into one of the worst situations in pro sports currently, for like from the ownership level on down, it might just break him. Just like we saw Justin, like we've seen with many quarterbacks before. So you get into these hopeless situations, and sometimes you just can't claw your way out of it. You know, you mentioned the other Carr brother, similar situation, man. Sometimes you're just not going to overcome one or two truly horrific first seasons. And that's it, no matter how talented you are.
Absolutely. So the last thing I wanted to discuss, Jared Goff just got paid.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Lions.
Hey, how you feeling about that, bro?
Okay, so this is important to talk about because we got a lot of things right about the draft last year, and we got a lot of praise about that, which is why I think we saw such an uptick in numbers here over this draft. One of the things people came out against us about was how we talked about the Lions draft last year, right? We were down on the Lions draft overall. And I think people interpreted that as us thinking, oh, the players they drafted are going to be bad. But what we were saying was they wasted their best chance at turning that team into a Super Bowl champion on a bunch of positions that just don't matter. that you can get for cheap and you can get quality players at. They got linebacker, they got tight end, they got running back. In a draft where they could have had Jalen Carter to put next to Aiden Hutchinson, they could have grabbed a top-tier quarterback prospect to sit behind Jared Goff and then built him into a juggernaut like Anthony Richardson. They could have done any number of things with that draft. And instead, they shored up the team as if they were already a Super Bowl contender. Now, they have gone out this offseason and they have locked this team in. This team is set in stone. They have no cap flexibility left. They are not going to go out and pick up an additional guy. They are not going to grab a final piece. This is what the Lions are now for the next 5 years. And this team is so plainly and obviously like a third best team in the NFC for the next 5 years that it hurts. Like, they're going to be every year. This is like the Falcons, the Matt Ryan Falcons, right? That's what it reminds me of. It's a team where before the season, you write them off because you're like, yeah, that's just those guys. They're always that way. And then like week 13, you're like, damn, man, why do I always forget about these guys? Like, they look so good. Like, their offense is good. Their defense is good. Like, of course it could be the Lions. This could be their year. And then they get into the playoffs and you go, oh, that's right. And then they flame out, right? That is what this most starkly reminds me of. It's a team that is just going to be so close and they're never going to get there.
Well, again, last year, Arizona had the third overall pick, so obviously up for sale. They ended up trading back with the Texans. It wouldn't have cost that much for the Lions to move up from 6 to 3, and you take Anthony Richardson. And then you have Jared Goff for 2 years to hand off to Anthony Richardson. Is one of the youngest quarterback prospects to come out in recent years. He was 20 years old, I think. He sits for 2 years when he's 22, and he's been in your system for 2 years already. You hand off from Jared Goff to Anthony Richardson, and then what is your ceiling with Anthony Richardson and all that runway? It's limitless, potentially. With Jared Goff, it's just, I know people want to say, it's so funny to me, people keep pointing out how incredibly similar his numbers are to Matthew Stafford's since the trade. And it's true, they're eerily similar. But people are ignoring that the Lions made that trade because it enabled them to build up the roster around Jared Goff. And the Rams made that trade because they had the bill came due for building up their roster around Jared Goff. They didn't have the talent that they had on the offensive line anymore. They didn't have a lot of the wide receiver. I mean, they have Cooper Kupp, obviously, but like there's not a lot of other expensive stars on that offense anymore for the Rams. They're all gone. The defense isn't loaded with stars. Like that roster had basically become the Cooper Kupp and Aaron Donald and a lot of other dudes, and they needed a quarterback who could carry them, not a quarterback that they had to carry. And Matthew Stafford was that. He had just enough. He carried them. They won a Super Bowl. This year, they were so competitive where they shouldn't. I mean, they just shouldn't have been. Look at that Rams roster. Tell me with a straight face that they should have been in the playoff hunt as late as they were.
Absolutely.
It only happened because Matt Stafford is playing the best ball of his life and doing supernatural shit. Meanwhile, Jared Goff still has the same splits he's always had. When he's pressured versus when he's not, he's just not pressured a lot in Detroit because he has that outstanding offensive line. But Penei Sewell just got paid. They're paying guys on that offensive line. What happens when they have to let some of those guys go? What happens when that offensive line, which they also don't have everything's built around that run game and that run, not to insult Jahmyr Gibbs, who's awesome, but like especially the David Montgomery part. We know how dependent David Montgomery is on a great offensive line to open up holes for him. When that offensive line erodes a little bit, what does that look like? Jared Goff's problem last time came when he went from being a guy who could be carried by the team to a guy who had to carry the team. And this Lions team is going now to transition again to where like, look, man, you're getting paid the money. You're going to have to carry us a little bit. And we have seen in the past, and I still think we saw in the playoffs, I still think we saw in a couple games when he really got pressured. Hell, against the Bears, we really see that. When Jared Goff has to carry this team, he's still not that guy. He is the best possible version of the other guy. He's very Kirk Cousins in that way. He is as good as you can possibly get at being that system guy. But that's still all he is. And looking at the cap hits on the contract, they're still manageable for the next 2 years, and then it's jumping up to a $70 million cap hit, basically, after that.
Well, so guess what happens in 2 years? Guess what happens in 2 years? Aiden Hutchinson's a free agent.
Right.
And now you have to give out probably the biggest edge rusher contract in NFL history, and you're paying as much money as you possibly could to freaking Jared Goff. You're going to lose the other guys. You're going to have to get rid of Sewell, probably. Or you're going to have to get rid of Amon-Ra St. Brown. You're going to have to gut this team in other places.
Yeah.
And yeah, you'll still be good. You'll still be this third best team in the NFC or something. You're still going to win between 10 and 13 games. But you're never going to get over that hump now. You are locked in. Yes. Like, do the Lions think right now, with all these guys locked in, that they can beat San Francisco? I can't imagine that they do, right? How about if the Eagles hadn't handed the reins over to Matt Patricia, do they honestly think right now they're better than Philadelphia?
And on the other side of the coin, like, a lot of people are like, well, what did you want the Lions to do? And the answer is nothing. This is it. This was the move they had to make at this point. Yeah. They locked the move to make. There was not a move to make this offseason. There's not a move to make.
This was it.
Next offseason with that quarterback class that we've said looks bad and is part of why NFL teams are acting so desperate this year. The move was to be made last year, and we said it when they didn't make it. We said it during that draft.
They had their chance. They had a golden opportunity to bury the NFC.
If the Lions move up, it probably cost them a second round pick to move up from 6 to 3 in that draft. And they had 2 second round picks to begin with. If they move up, they take Anthony Richardson, they have a perfect handoff plan for Jared Goff, and I'm shitting my pants, man. I'm sitting here right now being like, the Lions aren't going away, man. Their window is however long Anthony Richardson's there now. Like, that's what we're worried about. But we're not saying that now. So, I'm not criticizing the Lions for giving him that contract. That's the market rate. He is the best quarterback on the market, but that is what happens when you are reactive and not proactive at the quarterback position.
Yep. And I don't want to,
misconstrued. Right.
I don't want this to be misconstrued.
We both had, I think,
we think they'll be good.
Right.
We think they're a good team for a long time.
Yeah, as of this moment,
it's that they've locked themselves in underneath so many other teams.
Yeah. I mean, as of this moment in time, until I see what the Packers defense looks like, until I see what Caleb Williams looks like, of course, they're still the betting favorite in the NFC North right now. But you took a running back and you took a linebacker and you took a tight end and you took a safety, and they were all guys we liked. I think that they were all four. I mean, that was RB1, LB1, safety 1, tight end 1 for both of us in that draft, all four of them.
Yeah.
And it was never about the players, but it was about understanding that you were locking yourself in to exactly what just happened now. You had a chance to be bold. You played it safe. And now what does that say? Now, granted, the Lions, maybe Jared Goff has the Flacco run in him, and the egg will be on our faces, and the Lions will be like, well. So we could get dunked on, but I don't think we will, and I think we all kind of have that feeling that if Jared Goff had that in him, I mean, basically nobody's had more of a chance to have it.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the other thing. You talked about the idea that they could have traded up for Anthony Richardson. How about you sit still? You draft Jalen Carter, because then when you sign Jared Goff, you can have the Flacco run, because the Flacco run was also not just built on Flacco.
Right.
That was built on an ethereal run by that Ravens defense, right? It was something that also happened at the same time that Flacco had some great games. Goff can have some great games, but this defense also isn't going to be that super top flight shut down defense. Now, if they had Jalen Carter, if they had that other massive interior presence next to Aiden Hutchinson, suddenly you're shutting down San Francisco and you're giving fits to a Pat Mahomes who doesn't have wide receivers, right? Maybe you have that shot. They had a chance to take an extremely talented guy, whether it be a quarterback, whether it be a defensive tackle. Now, this draft, they fell into one of the best corners in the draft. Holy shit, suddenly you have a world-beating defense. You have not just the best defense in the NFL that year, but maybe an all-time defense put across from Jared Goff. And You can win a Super Bowl with that. Can you do that with this roster? Do they honestly think that? Like, I'm not buying into this team in that way. I'm buying into them winning the NFC North until, like you said, you know, guys with a higher ceiling like Jordan Love or Caleb Williams, I'm not going to say J.J. McCarthy, but one of those two guys could absolutely just explode. And then suddenly you're looking at Jared Goff and you're like, I'm paying this guy $53 million and he's getting run out of here by a guy who sat on Green Bay's bench for 4 years, or a fucking guy who's, what, a rookie or a second-year player? Like, what did we lock ourselves into, and now we have to pay Aiden Hutchinson? So, yeah, I mean, I'm down overall because I really thought the Lions had a shot here, and now I think they've closed that door on the Super Bowl. But, yeah, I think they're going to be good for a long time. They're going to be very competitive, and honestly, maybe for Detroit fans, that's enough here.
Yeah,
but it is. It's weird to feel sympathy for an NFC North rival, but it's just like you were so close, Detroit. You were right there. You had it in your hands. You could have had Jalen Carter. You could have had Anthony Richardson
again.
And you just didn't. You didn't take it.
It feels very much like a Bears thing to do. Like it was like previous, like, you know, when you're Jerry Angelo, and you could have been bold. You could have reacted to the events around you and been like, look, Rex has gotten hurt 2 years in a row. Yeah. He wasn't very good. Aaron Rodgers is just there. He's fallen into our laps. What if we just took this Aaron Rodgers kid? What if we just did it? Be bold. Think, you know, but instead, you know, you take the need and things like that. You know, it's they thought
they were one piece away. They thought, man, we are a Super Bowl contender right now. We just need to reinforce this team, and we can coast in there. We can win a Super Bowl with the guys we've got. And they needed to say, what if we put ourselves over the top? Like, what if we go out and get another extremely talented guy, and we just keep pushing until we actually win the Super Bowl? And instead, they wish casted. And it feels like they're going to be so tantalizingly close for so long, and there's always going to be a team that is just, they've just got more talent, and they're better at the most important position in sports, and that's it.
All right, well, so yeah, that's just a quick little glance at some things around the league. Again, we're going to try to talk to our buddy Eric, make sure that this happened to my buddy Eric. We're going to see if he can join us next week, start debating that. But yeah, if you listen to this episode, tweet at me your bad Bears games and your best arguments for them. Email us if you want pizza roll. Email us your bad Bears games and why. We want to get this tournament rolling. Let's do some purging, folks. Let's get some catharsis.
This is going to be, yeah, man, we are going to spend the next like 3 to 4 weeks having some fun. Yes, purging ourselves over these bad games and some bad Bears history. And we want you to do the same. So yeah, startkyleorton@gmail.com. Send a tweet or a DM to Kyle. Start Kyle Orton. The L is an I. And if you forget that, Kyle will beat you with a sock filled with nickels. I want to hear all of your stories. I want to hear your reasoning. And then, yeah, we're going to get into this tournament. We're going to figure it out. We're going to crown a champion for the worst Bears game of our lifetime. And I can't wait, man. I have been watching a lot of bad Bears games, Kyle. I've been taking notes. Some of these games, like, they might even be worse than when I watched them originally. And I can't wait to talk about them.
Absolutely. It's going to be fun. All right, folks. Well, have a good week. Again, tweet your traumas at me. Behold, in the Delta, way out on that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.